It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We're going to have a great show for you. Andy and Renee and Alex are here to talk about the Apple earnings, $18 billion, and all that money overseas. What could Apple do with it? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 440, recorded February 3rd, 2015. The $2 billion gazebo. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace. Creating and editing your website is easier than ever with Squarespace 7. It's so easy that Jeff Bridges created his website, dreamingwithjeff.com. Try it now. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code MacBreak at checkout to get 10% off. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that gives you all the latest news from Apple with Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Snowbound.
Hello.
You're not going to open that curtain?
Because I haven't I've been so lazy, I haven't like reset my office the way it was before, and now it is that kind of really awful weather where it is super, super bright.
The
snow is out. It's the worst kind. The worst weather. The worst driving weather isn't necessarily when it's snowing, because you know enough not to go out when it's snowing. It's weather like this where it's not a cloud in the sky,
right,
and the snow is melting and turning the entire road into a reflective surface. And it seems like everywhere you go, you have to drive due west.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. Ooh. Well, stay warm. I don't know why we're talking about snow in Boston when we got Rene Ritchie from Montreal, where it's probably, look, he's even wearing a toque.
We have no snow, but it was minus 30 this morning and minus 30 last night, and it's getting warmer, but that's including wind chill, but it's still not humanly pleasant. So I turned off the heat so the fan noise wouldn't be loud, and then I got really cold.
Minus 30 Celsius is what?
It gets close to the same thing in the minus 30.
When it gets to minus 40, it's the same.
Yeah.
So it's bloody cold is what it is.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Well, all right. Well, stay inside.
Yeah, we're doing that. We have, again, like this, like Andy said, everything is clear, but it looks like the entire city has been encased in carbonite. So it's a very strange feeling.
Of course, Renee's with iMore.com, does the great debug podcast and so many other things. Great to have you both. Andy and Renee will be joined in a bit, I think, by Alex Lindsay, who is rushing back from the Vatican as we speak.
He's like a Swiss Guard escort.
He's like the linebacker that brings in the play from the offensive coordinator to the quarterback. He's got a message for us.
He's got a sheaf of diagrams and numbers. And the next now he's on his way to St. Paul's after this with a pickaxe.
Francis is doing the play calling.
He's cracked the code. He knows what it means.
Wow, we were off the air before Apple announced its earnings last week, which is probably a good thing because we would have had to parse them on the fly. Now we've had enough time to break out the calculator and find out how much per second is $18 billion profit in 3 months. I wonder if there's a Google search for that. The most money any company has ever made in the history of the world.
And again, you can't drive your car with these. You can't heat your house with these. You can't eat these.
Yeah. Yeah, that's normally who, the competition is all the natural gas and oil companies.
Yeah.
$18 billion in profit. But as we thought it might happen, the iPad sales continue to decline. I got to point out, they sold 21.4 million in Q1. Their fiscal quarter one is our holiday buying season.
That would be the outbreak star of any other company's lineup.
It ain't bad, but it is a decline. On the other hand, iPhone sales, 74.5 million in 3 months.
Yeah.
My favorite line was Ben Thompson when he said that he calculated that Apple lost more on currency fluctuations than Google made that quarter.
Yeah, it was something like 4% because of currency fluctuations. In fact, Tim Cook kind of bemoaned the fact that they couldn't, these damn countries can't get their currencies straight.
That was all the analysts wanted to. What are you hedging? How are you hedging? Are you changing your hedges? How often are you changing your hedges?
Although it cracks me up that here's a company that made more money than any company is in history. I don't know if you adjust for inflation, maybe, you know, Julius Caesar made more or something, but, and then in cash has $142 billion in cash, but this is the definition to me of chutzpah. They decided to go to the bond market to borrow $30 billion. Please, sir.
Well, they need to, because all that money is overseas.
It's not Ireland or somewhere. Yeah.
And they bring this it back and they pay 35%.
Yeah, it really is like Tony Montana, where he's made all this money, but he can't spend all of it because then it becomes traceable, and he doesn't want that.
What country is it in?
It's in Ireland, but it's basically everywhere outside the U.S. Anything that Apple makes in one of their subsidiaries that accounts for money outside the U.S.
And like Google and other companies, I mean, a lot of companies do this. If you have enough money, and you have a structure that you can arrange to have. Intellectual property rights reside in Ireland, where the corporate tax rate is very low. You do that. You transfer it over to the Irish subsidiary. Could be a guy at a desk in Dublin.
It's interesting, though. I mean, for all these companies, because if I'm in Canada, if I buy a computer, does the U.S. government get a share of that? If someone in London buys an Apple computer, right, because Apple's headquartered in America, should the U.S. government get a cut of that?
No.
We're moving faster. Like the internet, we're moving faster than a lot of the laws,
but this is a manipulation. This is not $142 billion in cash earned in Ireland. These are payments that come from the U.S. subsidiaries to the Irish rights holders and things like that.
I don't know if it comes out of the U.S., but it's structured not to put anything into the U.S.
Right.
It doesn't absolutely have to go there.
And of course, China was huge. Apple shipped more smartphones than any other company in China last quarter. And so that money, for instance, probably flows to Ireland.
And so much for the theory that Apple has to go cheap to gain the Chinese market.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? iPhones accounted for half of all U.S. smartphone activations in the quarter. So they have a 50%, they had a 50% market share in Q. Our calendar fourth quarter, holiday buying season, their first quarter. But interesting. I still think, even though 21 million iPads sold, I still think it is interesting. It dropped so much, 21%. Is the iPad over?
I don't know. I think it has to do with the fact that you're looking at one phone that had the most dramatic update in years and years and years. I mean, it's folks like us try hard to explain, well, here's why the A7 processor is a big upgrade over the A6. Here's why you want this mobility processor, and here's why the more application RAM is going to do something. But nothing is going to have that sort of impact as it's a much bigger screen. You know how you've been, your wife or your husband or your kids have an Android phone with a big screen. You've always wanted. Great, we now have it for you. As opposed to the iPad Air 2, which all they can say is it looks exactly like last year's model, except for now we've added Touch ID and we've made it faster in a way that maybe you're not going to be able to appreciate. So I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that the 9.7-inch iPad Air is stagnant at this point. But if this continues, if Apple does another upgrade, if Apple upgrades the iPad the same way that they upgraded the iPhone 6, and it still is, there's more people buying that, but not really dramatic, that will be a really significant data point.
One thing that's interesting to me is that it's a multifaceted question. And the tablet market in general was down last quarter. For nobody was it a growth industry, really. So the question is, with the bigger screen phones, that puts pressure on the tablets from below. With laptops that are lighter and longer lasting batteries, that puts pressure on tablets from above. And we're at, there was a fascinating post, I think Neil Seibert from Above Avalon did it, where he was looking at the job that Steve Jobs originally outlined for the iPad, where it's better at email, it's better at web, it's better at music, it's better at all these things, and how many of those things are now really well served by large screen phones, and how many are really well served by ultralight, long-lasting laptops. And that job, that sweet spot has sort of diminished. And we've also gotten to a point where the iPad Air 2 is ridiculous. The Apple A8X processor is ridiculous. It's close to a current desktop-level processor, but we don't really take advantage of that. The operating system, the apps, they don't really let us take all of that power. The hardware now has surpassed the software, and you can look at Microsoft doing the Windows 10 thing. You can look at what Google's doing with tablets, but at some point, Apple might also have to, whether it's with an iPad 12-inch or an iPad Pro, or with a new version of iOS that's as specifically tailored to tablets as watchOS is targeted to watches, might have to do something to better take advantage of that hardware.
It's also possible that the reason why the 9.7-inch iPad was such a big hit was because there was nothing like it, and consumers never had the ability. It took 2 or 3 years for consumers to have the ability to actually vote for what kind of size they want. And now that they're in the position where a consumer can say, instead of this big device right here, we can instead give you a phone that is just simply big enough that you're more comfortable reading books on it. Or if you really do want a tablet, we'll give you something that you can actually stick in your back pocket. A lot of people are saying, well, I never actually really wanted a 9.7-inch tablet to begin with, and maybe it's also possible that this larger size is going to be orphaned, which is why I'm really keen to follow up on rumors about the mythical iPad Pro. If Apple were to simply say, okay, instead of making this a smaller something, we'll make this a bigger something, not just in size, but in, we are anticipating that maybe you would buy this instead of even an iPad, a MacBook Air.
Hey, Alex Lindsay joins us Vatican City. No, you're back home.
No, I'm in. I'm not in the Vatican now. I was shortly.
Are you in before, Rome?
But I'm in Rome. I'm in. Rome. I'm up in a hill above Rome. Right now. So
wonderful. Great to have you.
Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. We're talking. We just started. We're talking Apple's quarterly results from their first quarter. I should point out.
The real problem was is that I think that Apple just really has to figure out where they're going to have to cut staff and cut back on some of the stores.
Notice how Tim Cook ducked the licensing question yet again.
I think Apple should sell clones, or somebody should.
The hilarious thing was I don't know if it was a verse, but someone put up an article about the Surface sales, and the Surface sales were in the millions, and wow, Surface is booming, and then the iPad sales were only in the 27 million, whatever it was. Oh, iPhone is busting, even though it's significantly better than every other tablet.
That's still a significant data point. If Apple is there's a phrase that I keep coming back to when I look at stuff like that is like you kind of get worried when a company finally finds the car keys, where you make fun of Surface, something like Surface, where justifiably that it's not really relevant and there is much better value, but they're still, Microsoft is still like looking for the car keys, and once they find those keys and jump in the car and they really now they're finally going to start driving, that's when you start worrying. The fact that Surface 3 is so much of an improvement, and the fact that people are not only aware of it but now they're thinking, I'd actually want to own one of these things, that's going to be such an interesting data point as, once again, Apple tries to figure out what role in life does a 9.7-inch iPad play in a world where you can buy a really good i5-based Windows tablet for about the same amount of money, assuming that you're buying one to get actual work done.
That was the amazing thing about the profits is you saw that with the Mac for years, that they had a single-digit market share, but they made a significant amount of profit share. And that's always because they've catered to customers who really appreciate value, where cost isn't the first feature on their list. And then the iPhone, you see how that scales. When there actually is market share to go along with that profit share, they make ungodly amounts of money. And the iPad is somewhere in between, where it still has super high margin. It's not as popular as the iPhone, but it's more popular than the Mac. And it makes, tons and tons of money. And I think that's part of the discussion that gets lost often, is that Apple's model really does scale well. They're under no pressure for the iPad. And Tim Cook kept saying, over the long spectrum of history, he wants to keep investing in that technology. There's no profit and loss per division at Apple. So it's not like, oh, the iPad is not keeping up with things, or the Apple TV isn't, we're going to cut them. It's, 5 years from 10 years, how does it add to the overall value of our ecosystem?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
I'm sorry. We've been talking for a half hour. You haven't talked at all. Go.
I just think it's interesting that we've talked about this before, that you really are in a situation where every single division that is really running at Apple theoretically is making money. I mean, it's not, and they'd be good businesses on their own. I mean, even the much derided Final Cut 10 would probably be a very successful company if it was on its own, And so, as far as how many, what sales it's gotten over the last year. And so every single division is kind of to some degree hitting their mark. I do find that with the larger phone, I find myself just very I don't use my iPad that often. I mean, is that how you guys feel about your iPad? Are you still, is it still part of that process? I mean, I just noticed that anecdotally, I don't use it as often. I use my phone or I use my computer, but I find that the iPad in general has kind of, which is obviously something I was very excited about and still am to some degree, but I find that in a lot of ways, the interface itself, you know, it's big enough that you want it to be more powerful. And as Renee was talking about that, you know, we're not taking full advantage of it, but I partially think that's partially the interface. You know, there's a lot of things that I feel like I would do. And I'm thinking of getting a, you know, Microsoft Surface specifically because there's a lot of things that every time I see the commercial, it's working. I'm like, that's what I want.
It's working. Yeah. Hard to believe. Yeah. Wow.
You know, that's what I want. I mean, I want to be able to do that. And I'm probably in the next week or two buying a Surface just so that I can do those things when I need to, you know, rather than continually waiting for Apple to finally, you know, put touch on my laptop.
I'm in sort of a weird position because I have explicitly set aside this year some money to buy a new iPad because my iPad, the one that I actually own as opposed to the ones that I borrow and have to send back after 30 to 60 days, is a third generation iPad, like the first Retina model. And it was working just fine. But I find myself thinking a lot of the things that you've been thinking, Alex, which is that if I'm going to buy one to use the way that I used to use my iPad 3, I'm going to need something pretty powerful. And if I'm going to be spending $800 for an iPad, what else could I buy for $800? And the Surface 3 is actually very, very good. I don't think it's suitable for my needs right now. But if Microsoft, again, finds the car keys on Windows 10 and finds a way to make it really relevant, that could really change a great deal. And I also agree with you in that ever since I bought my MacBook Pro 2013 last year or the year before, the fact that it's not as light as an iPad, but now it's light enough. The battery doesn't last as long as an iPad, but it lasts long enough. And frankly, using an iPad for content for like as a laptop replacement is enough of a pain in the butt that I'm willing to sort of sacrifice those things and actually take a 13-inch notebook along with me. So there's a lot of moving parts, and this is going to be an interesting year for the future of the iPad, I think.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I commonly think of when I'm at an airport, because one of the things that you see a lot of is you see a lot of kids using iPads and you see a lot of, you know, folks that are over, you know, 50 or 60 using iPads. And sometimes I feel like I'm in the wrong generation for the iPad, you know, the one that grew up on a computer, you know, that you know, I find that there's a lot of things that I want to do. I probably use it a little harder. I want to type a little faster. I want to have certain things. I want to be able to cut and paste out of every application. If I see text, I expect to be able to, unless it's an image, I expect to be able to cut it and paste. I can't say how many times I go into an iPad app that they've decided for whatever reason, security or whatever, that I'm not allowed to select the text. And that kind of becomes this thing like, okay, now I can't use this anymore.
It becomes things like, I just want to duck into one other app to get one piece of information, then go back again. Exactly. And the fact that I have to do this like a couple of different times to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm also preparing a review finally of the Nexus 9 tablet. And Android tablets, boy, they just don't have a fraction of the nice software that's available on iOS. They barely have competency, whereas they have equivalency on the phone end of it. And yet, you know what? If I want to use it as a notebook replacement, I can hook up a mouse to it. And the thing I didn't really realize until I started using that way is, wow, well, that's one of the things about Android 5 that's really nice. It really is an okay desktop operating system. And I can use keyboard commands to switch between apps. And it's like, I still can't run two apps side by side, but it's easy enough to switch between the two that I would never be tempted to switch to an Android tablet because, again, the tablet-style apps just aren't there. But it really did remind me of how easy it would be to just add a little bit of extra functionality to the iPad that would make it a much more credible choice to help it to justify that $600 to $800 price tag.
Well, and I think that the thing is that with the Surface again, you know, for me, one of the things that I think about a lot is that I want to have it all. I want to have a mouse. I want to have a keyboard, and I want to be able to touch the screen when I need to touch the screen. When I want to sign something or circle something, I don't want to have to pull out my Wacom tablet and do it. And one of the ways you can get kind of a preview of what that looks like is when you're using Duet. Duet is the little app that, you know, you can hook your iPad to, and your iPad does become a touch screen for your OS. And so you can sit there, and if you have it open, a lot of times if I'm annotating stuff, I'll have Duet open and I can just sit there and circle things and talk about them. And it's a second monitor, but it's also a way for me to throw something over that I want to draw on and then throw it back, you know, and it's just, that's And I feel like, you know, at some point, you know, Apple is no rush. The iPad and the computer are way behind. I get that. So it's not like there's any threat that Apple has to ever put touchscreen into their computer. But I mean, there's people like me that are just, I mean, who are about as dyed-in-the-wool Mac user as you can get, that are going out to buy a Surface because they're not solving the problem.
Yeah. Well, we made fun on the show. Maybe I've just made fun of the show of Apple TV. But that's such a good demonstration of the power and the abilities that Apple has. That yes, it's kind of a duff sort of product. It's been so for the past year and a half. But Apple does not need to rush out a replacement because they're seeing what the sales are doing or not doing. They can really nurse this along for a couple of years until the rest of the world's the rest of their product line sort of aligns itself to make it worth their while to make that really big update. If they'd done a major update last year, it might not have been quite so clear what that hardware and software update would have needed to be. Whereas if they decide to do that this year or even next year, they'll know, okay, we've got the Apple Watch and we know how people are using the watch. We've got big screen iPhones, we know how that's working. We've got HomeKit products out there, we know how people are using those. Now we can finally build a new Apple TV that is absolutely perfect for 2016, as opposed to our best guess for what would have been appropriate for 2013 or 2014.
Interesting also to note that this is, besides, you know, everybody paid attention to the record iPhone sales, but Mac sales also at a record, and App Store sales also at a record. So very good quarter. I've done a little calculations in my numbers spreadsheet. They sold 74.5 million iPhones in 3 months. The global birth rate is 4.1 babies per second. I think they're going to run out of customers because they're selling 10 iPhones per second. So, folks, bring the birth rate up, or we're gonna have to sales are going to slow here.
Their average deal price for
China is a big.
They're selling twice as many iPhones as there are babies being born.
They're going to start to like lobby the Chinese government to waive like the one child program.
We need more babies. Exactly.
There are a lot of you, and we need more of you buying iPhones.
Look, babies have two hands. That's two phones. Come on.
And two wrists and two legs.
Okay, good point. You don't have to have just one. That's kind of amazing that they're selling more than twice as many iPhones per second as there are babies born. And this is globally. This is in the world. Yeah. This is everywhere. A profit of $18 billion, of course, $6 billion a month. That's about $200 million a day. $8 million an hour. $138,000 a minute, $2,314 a second. Just boom, 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 profit.
Another 2,000.
I'm going to have to modify a joke I heard a couple years ago. So when someone has that level of wealth, you know that part of their business has to involve overthrowing uncooperative governments from time to time. That's the amount of money this company's making now.
Let's assume that the $142 billion in cash is available, which it isn't. I mean, that's why they have to borrow. So bizarre. They have to borrow $30 billion. Is that bond issue?
Well, have we talked? And I know I came in a little late. Did we talk about the ramifications of the one time tax that may occur?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, are you saying this is a proposal in the U.S. Congress right now that they should pay a one? Oh, you're talking about repatriating the $142 billion.
Well, Obama is talking about, as of yesterday, is talking about a one-time tax on all foreign assets. So
this
all
is
that
his
money
new budget.
For
yeah.
all the companies, yeah. You know, $2 trillion, of which Apple has $178 billion that's sitting around, and basically putting a one-time tax of 19%, and then they're talking about future taxes of 14% per year on foreign revenue, so that you can't fully avoid it. Now, the one thing that they are saying is that the 19%, once it's been taxed, you could bring all that money back without taxes. And so in some ways, that becomes a break for Apple being or anyone else.
Well, it's normally a 35%. It's
35%.
Yeah. So
yeah, so it would be a discount. I think that, you know, with a Republican Congress, I think what may end up happening is a tax across everything of 10% or 15% or something like that, and then you can bring it back in, which would be kind of the, you know, a compromise in the middle of that. But that could be a huge boom for companies. It's upsetting. I think some of them obviously don't want to pay any taxes on it, want to leave it out
there
forever.
That's why they put it there.
For a company
right?
like Apple, the prospect of paying, let's say, 15% or 10% or 12% on all of it and then bringing it all back in, you know, could be a real advantage over the 35% that they're paying now.
As a non-American, though, the idea of America taxing things that are outside of America is a little bit legally questionable and disturbing.
Well, I think it opens up a can of worms for basically every other country looking at it going, well, if it works for America, we'll do it too. I mean, I think that I think that right now, as an American citizen, you pay your taxes no matter where you are in the world. You know, a lot of these companies, I think the future is not going to be that you can have all these tax breaks. You know, you can kind of see things just like when businesses aren't working. You know, taxis didn't work, and then Uber came up, and you know, the idea of having tax free income at the level that it's had. I mean, it's been a good advantage that a lot of companies have had, but I think that we need to be realists about whether that's going to continue with the number of countries that are looking for places to find revenue, whether we like it or not. I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with it or not, but I think that whether we like that or not, we're very probably going to see some way to tax companies no matter where they are.
You're talking about Obama's plan or the Boxer Rand Paul plan? Because
it's definitely not the Boxer Rand Paul plan.
That's the Invest in Transportation Act. They're saying a tax holiday allowing companies to pay 6.5% on repatriated tax, but that would go to the Highway Trust Fund.
Obama's saying the same thing, except he's saying we're going to take 19% right. No matter whether you repatriate it or not. So here's the deal. You're going to pay 19%, and then after that, you can bring it in. You can bring in anything that you pay taxes on, you can bring back into the country with no more tax impact. So it is in some ways a tax holiday, but basically what it's not saying, when you say we're going to repatriate the taxes, that we're going to tax you 6%, the companies bring in whatever they need that is – And pays that 6%. So they go, okay, that's great. They'll bring in billions, in because that is an opportunity for them.
Yeah.
When you tax all of it, the concept is when you say we're going to tax everything that's sitting out there, what it does is it takes away any inhibition for the companies to leave it out there because now they've already paid the taxes on it. They might as well bring in. And I think the goal is not only to generate a lot of revenue, which it would, but also to bring in all that, the $2 trillion, bringing a big healthy chunk of it back into the United States to be invested into, more local business, because a lot of times those decisions are made.
Those countries are charging, like Apple's paying taxes in the countries where that money is. Like they're paying Irish taxes, they're paying Canadian taxes, they're paying German taxes. So they'd be paying those taxes plus American taxes, which is different than just if America alone was taxing them. And then if
the issue is that right now they're not paying any taxes.
Taxes in the other countries.
Well, they're paying the local taxes on the local sales, but all the profits that are going into the problem that they're having right now, of course, is that they're not paying any taxes on. And I am like the last person to talk about the benefits of taxing. I mean, I'm not a big fan of them at all. But as you look at it, I think that from a realist perspective. And I have, because a bunch of stuff that I'm working on, I've had to study a lot of this over the last couple months. And you just kind of see that the trajectory is that they're going to, that countries are going to find a way to dig into that. You can't keep $2 trillion floating around forever without paying somebody for it. You know, I think that's.
Apple sold 5.5 million Macs last quarter, enough to give one to every person in Ireland. How about that?
And their ASP.
Every person where in Iowa?
In Ireland.
Do they really think that they're capable of processing 5 million iCloud activations on the same day?
No, they can't.
I don't think so.
They could buy. I'm sorry, I said 142. It's 178 billion in cash. Yep. They could buy IBM. Its current market cap is 152 billion. They could buy Ford, GM, and Tesla, and still have 41 billion left over. So Microsoft better find those car keys fast, because
buy all the things, Leo.
They could buy everything. They could buy the music industry. They could probably buy most of the television industry.
Yeah. And like Alex said, they could start. Or Andy said they could start overthrowing unfriendly governments.
But they can't do it because it's in Ireland, and so they'd have to pay tax on it.
They could overthrow non-American companies.
I mean, if you look at Disney. I mean, we've talked about this before. Disney's market cap is $155 billion. So Apple could buy Disney with cash, and that. When you look at the marketing opportunities of having Marvel, Star Wars, and then all the Disney stuff, all the Disney properties.
What
as well.
Do you do with all that cash? I mean, what's the point of all that cash?
Well, it's to be able to do things like that.
Yeah, but they've never done that. I mean, they've
never have.
they're spending $2 billion yesterday on a data center. It's their ability to, you know, they people say they should buy Twitter, they should buy this with a Tesla, but they're dropping $2 billion on a data center. They could do the same thing tomorrow. Right. They could build 20 data centers if they want to be more competitive with Google and Amazon.
I think the most competitive thing they do with that money is to other companies will simply license technology they need. Apple will buy it outright. There was a statement, some interview with, I wish I remember which executive it was, but it was someone pretty highly placed. He was talking about the development of the Nexus 6 phone, saying that on fingerprint ID was one of the things on their wish list for the Nexus 6. It was actually going to, there's a little divot in the back right. of the phone that the Motorola, they were going to put it right there. But as they were developing it, they said, well, who has the best like fingerprint scanners on the market? Well, it's this one company that has the ones that really work, but Apple owns them out right now. And so there's no way to get that. And so that wasn't the only reason why they didn't put it on there, but it means that's one of the reasons why they decided to leave it off. When you think about Apple's money, you think about firepower. Again, it's not, they don't have to buy what they need, they don't have to license what they need. They can own the technology that they're going to make a tentpole feature, which is not only great for them, but it also means that if Microsoft Surface Tablet wants to do something that's tricky that Apple uses, they're probably not going to be able to find either a supplier for the part or a company that's capable of manufacturing the way that they need something to be manufactured, or at least at that scale.
I was talking to an electronics manufacturer who I'll leave unnamed. They were talking, I was complaining, and it's what I do very well, about the fact that they were 6 months late on shipping this great little box that they were building for stuff I need, and hence the complaint. I asked them, you know, what was the delay, and they said the iPhone. They literally, that Apple bought, there's this one little Surface Mount chip, and Apple bought all of them.
Right.
they literally bought all right. of them for a year. Like, they were like, they had the whole design finished. Everything's working. They literally can't get the chips to build the, mm-hmm. you know, there's one little chip that's made out of stuff that's very rare. And there's only one company that makes them and you can't buy them, you know, because
Palm
Apple
used to
does.
Complain
and
I think about that.
Sorry?
Palm used to complain about that all the time.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that Apple continues to be able to do this, where they can simply buy up the world's supply of X, Y, and Z in a way that they can buy it. You know, they can hedge against a lot of things. They can buy a lot of things that they may not use in the future because they have that kind of capital.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever do it tactical buying, where there's a component that they've already rejected, but they know that someone else can make a lot of hay out of it. But so if they could just simply disrupt other people's access to it, I don't know. I do not know. I'm just speculating. I'm sorry. I'm not even speculating, but I'm wondering. It's just that when you have this much money and your job is to make a world, do whatever you can to ensure the success of your product, if you have the ability to simply say that we don't feel as though we're gonna buy up every single pair of pants in the world and we're gonna be the king of pants, like the old Louis C.K. joke. Now, if anybody wants pants, they're gonna have to come to me, the king of pants.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, it's, I don't even think that's necessarily an unethical thing for them to do. I'm just wondering, there are things that you say you would never do because, oh, for heaven's sakes, who is ever gonna give me $10,000 to be a prostitute with one person for one time? But okay, here's $10 million, yes or no? There are things that I don't think companies, we would never do that. It's a too complicated thing, and we'd much rather focus our attention on making our own products better. But okay, guess what? You have an amount of money in cash that can be expressed in terms of a fraction of $1 trillion. Now, are you saying that you would never do this?
Sapphire, Andy, they bought up all the sapphire.
Exactly.
I should point out that Apple's tax.
I can't get a phonograph needle for my Victrola. Why?
We're going to move on. I should point out that Apple's tax rate is 26.3% according to their quarterly report, which is about half, a little more than half of what I pay in business taxes. Of course, we're in a high tax state. Oh, wait a minute. So is Apple. Never mind. their revenue gross margin was between 38.5% and 39.5%, which actually is not a huge margin.
Jeff Williams got some nice credit after this quarter, which he replaced Tim Cook effectively as VP of Senior Vice President of Operations, and he's been under the radar for a long time. But
done a good job.
Got him. Yeah, really good job. Having Tim Cook as CEO and Jeff Williams as SVP of Operations has been incredibly profitable for Apple.
Well, I want to show you a little way you can make a little money on the side. I'm not talking $172 billion, but I have a feeling there's some money sitting in the drawers of your home that's just sitting there. Gathering dust. I'm talking about all those old gadgets, the iPhone, the Samsung phone, the BlackBerry phone, the iPad, the tablets. You got a Surface tablet, a Samsung tablet, a Google tablet. I've got somebody who will buy them from you right now, cash on the barrelhead. It's called Gazelle. And one of the great things about Gazelle is you can get a quote right now and give yourself 30 days to decide. Those quotes are locked in for 30 days, which is a great deal. The top dollar on a lot of products. Go get a quote. They pay the shipping. Once you decide to sell it, press the checkout button. They'll send you a box with the prepaid shipping on it. Then they'll also, if you forget to wipe the data, wipe it for you and send you a check, PayPal, or an Amazon gift card. They'll bump the value of the Amazon gift card by 5%. So if you spend a lot on Amazon, this is a good deal. Good money for your old stuff. Gazelle.com. They also sell. You might wonder, what happens to this stuff? Well, the very best stuff that's sold to Gazelle, they turn around, they check it, they put it through a 30-point inspection, and then they sell it as certified pre-owned. They have two classes of condition. Certified like new, which is good as new. Somebody bought something, never used it, sold it to Gazelle, they're selling it to you. And then certified good, which is some slight wear, gentle wear. But if you've lost your phone or broken it, or if you need a tablet and you don't want to spend top dollar, this is a great place to get a great price. Buy or sell at Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. What's your old iPhone worth? Find out. More than you think, probably. Why let it sit there and gather dust? It's worth money. Gazelle.com. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun. Nice to have you, Andy. From the Chicago Sun Times.
The big one.
The big one. Also from the Vatican, Mr. Alex Lindsay. No, he's not from the Vatican. He just came there from here, from there. And from iMore.com, Mr.
Alex,
Renee.
I think your mic is off. Can't
hear you, Alex. Yeah, I like it.
Sorry about that.
No, it was good. That's good. That's good. One other thing we learned in that earnings call, the Apple Watch will ship in April. We had been saying, in fact, even as late as last week, that it'd probably be end of March. This is not that big a difference, but at least we know.
We got the definition of early, Leo. Early is January to April. Mid is May to August. And late is September to December.
They said early 2015. We have learned from 9 to 5, Mac, I think we talked about this last week. Mark Gurman says they're working on the battery life. Do you feel like it's pretty close to done? We were talking on Twit, and Nick Bilton said, you know, because we mentioned there are 1,000 prototypes in use right now at Apple. Nick Bilton says he knows some people who are wearing Apple Watches. You think it's pretty close to done, Renee?
I mean, done is a moving target.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of manufacturers, it'd probably be done. I think that probably Apple is.
They're still polishing the gold.
Yeah. Well, the 18-karat gold, evidently, that needs safes.
Yeah. Yeah, they put safes in the stores. It's great.
It's a big moving target. They're giving a lot of people are wearing them. They're giving a lot of people the ability to test them. They have third-party apps being tested on them because the SDK is out and developers are starting to be able to target the device, and that's going to have to ship with the device. So it's getting a lot of pieces that have to land exactly at the same time. And that they're going to use as much time as they can for it. That's why Apple's usually loath to give much advanced data on when they're going to ship or what they're going to do.
And we should point out it could be April 1st or April 30th. I mean,
yeah. And I'm happy for Apple. Like, a lot of people, like, it's funny because the internet is really upset that Apple isn't taking more time and doing things more, making more stability and doing things better. But at the same time, they're really angry that Apple isn't shipping things faster. And those are two, you know, very contrasting truths. And I personally, with photos for the Mac and with the Apple Watch, if they said early 2015, I am happy for them to spend every hour of every minute of every day making that product as good as possible before it goes out the door in early 2015. I don't need that February 2nd.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're not setting themselves and locking themselves into an arbitrary ship date that they don't know if they can meet or not. Because in the end, we are very, very much trained to expect that whatever the next thing is, we can't have it fast enough. When really, if we get it in April as opposed to March, that's not going to change anybody's life whatsoever. I thought it was interesting that there are a couple of different people reporting having spotted somebody wearing an Apple Watch on the San Francisco Bay Area commuter rail, which would be interesting that. If it's true, that would be an interesting data point in that Apple is letting people off campus with these things, which would indicate that it's outside of a controlled environment, and also they have already had that lecture about now if you drink, here's the locked box you're going to put this watch in before you're allowed to drink. It's and
do you think they have a case like they're maybe they put it in a, like a Moto 360
There's no need to do that. This product is completely out in the open.
I guess.
And as a matter of fact, I would not even be surprised if this were part of the promotional campaign. Saying, well, now that we know that's going to be out in April, we will allow our employees to be discreet but wear them outside in the hopes that maybe someone will see them and get a picture and say, oh my God, I saw an Apple Watch. You saw an Apple Watch. What did it look like? It smelled like rose water and it glowed like a rising sun.
I wonder how funny people at Apple find it when we talk about this kind of stuff. Because I know, like, for example, when an invitation comes out and people start guessing the invitations, the design team just cracks open alcohol and starts drinking because it's so funny. The Apple, they've been wearing the Apple Watch since almost literally after it was announced. As soon as it was publicly announced, people who had carry privileges started wearing them outside of Apple campus. If you have lived in Cupertino, you have seen them for months, since October at the very least. It's nothing new. It's just at some point someone decided, oh, people might be wearing it outside. Let's go get some, let's go try and get some pictures. And personally, these are Apple engineers on their own time, and they're getting a lot of paparazzi-like treatment now, which we can debate whether that's ethical or not, because it's a watch. It doesn't really affect anybody's life. But this is nothing unusual. This is what they've been doing for months.
There it is.
And you pretty much have to do it. I mean, you have to be testing it.
I mean, yay, good for you. You spotted an Apple Watch on the train. Two thumbs up. You could have done that in October.
Mark Gurman has tweeted... This is how crazy it is. Here's the icon for the Apple Watch companion iPhone app.
Well, at least it's the one they're using now. I mean, there were icons in the iOS 8 beta that never shipped.
8.2, which is the iOS presumably that will have to ship concurrently with the Apple Watch so that you'll have watch compatibility, is now in beta 5, which, I mean, we're pretty far along with 8.2. Beta 5 just came out. As did Xcode 6.2 Beta 5 with WatchKit. As did, interestingly, a new beta version of Apple TV software for the third-gen Apple TV. So
yeah, those are all in lockstep.
Yeah. They are? Why is that?
Yeah, so the Xcode is what they use to develop on the new beta. So if there's new features in the beta that they need to update Xcode to go along with, that's fine. And Apple TV, even though out on the outside they give it some really weird OS name and number that's always behind iOS, inside it's running the same version of iOS. It gets updated when the phone does and when the iPad does.
Interesting.
And there's, I forgot to mention, someone from Apple tweeted that there's a now playing glance on the Apple Watch that's been updated in the developer documentation.
And that would be for something that's music or something that's playing on your phone.
Yeah, it's almost, I guess, like the lock screen on the iPhone. You can look at that and quickly see. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can, whatever it is.
Here's
and someone was
screens.
Asking about Apple TV, and Tim Cook mentioned that it controls the Apple TV during the introduction. Yeah.
That's neat. This is a screen, also a tweet from Mark Gurman. But as you point out, this is a prototype. Could be different. Could be the same. But I feel like we're getting close, though. April's just around the corner.
And they've got to burn the firmware onto the watch at the factory at some point.
Yeah. Do you think somebody goes with a briefcase locked to his wrist and gets on a plane and flies to Shenzhen, China and says...
I think there are really solid deadlines for that kind of stuff when it has to be shipped and people take care of it.
Yeah. They could probably do it on the internet, but on a really secure... Maybe use... I'd probably use OneDrive.
Here's the Dropbox.
Do you remember that story?
Yeah, Dropbox.
There was that great story about, I think it was Return of the King, when they had the final copy ready and the fiber didn't reach all the way to the production offices in New Zealand. So they loaded it on an iPod Classic and put it in the pocket, and they were running it from the fiber optic line back to the production office, and a guy started following him, and he thought it was... He wasn't sure if they wanted the iPod or they knew what was on it, and he just started running faster and faster.
You want to control your Tesla from your Apple Watch? There's an app for that. Well, you don't drive it.
Well, no, I mean, for temperature controls, a lot of people like who have pets, for instance, they will leave the pet in the car because they can keep the car warm and keep an eye on the temperature.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
I have a friend who is at times have been summoned like from a restaurant by police because some do-gooder was about to smash the windows. That poor dog, he's freezing to death inside that car.
No, look at my wristwatch. I can tell you exactly how cold.
Also look at that dog. He is like a Bernese mountain dog that can spend 3 days in the Swiss Alps. I don't think 33 degrees is going to bother him a lot.
Yeah, my boss has a Tesla and he uses the app on all his phones to open the door when his kid just wants to run to the car and get something he forgot in it. It's in order to monitor the charge level. It's all sort of useful.
Yeah.
Also, this is exactly the sort of integration that a company like Tesla wants and a company like Apple wants. They want people who can afford to spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a gadget like this to use it to control their gadget that costs tens of thousands of dollars.
Right. Right.
Really makes both companies look really good.
Ooh, you can even see a map and how fast you're going. Here's a guy going 120 miles an hour down University Avenue in Palo Alto. That seems a bad idea.
It was strictly for watch testing.
Purely for testing.
Well, and I think the fact that, and again, there was a during the when they're talking about the number of sales and Android and everything else, and that one of the things that one of the stats that came out this week was that, you know, the App Store is making 70% more, even though there's more apps now on the Android store. The iOS App Store is making more money, and I think that is going to make a big impact on it. Makes an impact on Apple Pay. It makes an impact on what kind of things get developed for the watch, because people are going to pay for it. You know, they're going to, you know, that it's a, I think it's going to be a market. I mean, I think especially for those who get out there in the first month or two, you know, who aren't part of 1.2 million or 1.1 million apps. I think there's going to be, you know, a huge opportunity. It's a bit of a gold rush. And so we're going to see, you know, a lot of innovation, and, you know, most of it will probably be pretty bad in the first 2 or 3 months, but it's going to be pretty exciting. I think that because people know that iOS users, and especially the folks that are going to be first adopters, once they pay $350 for a watch, they're going to spend another $150, $200 on apps within the first couple of weeks.
You can't charge for, you can, just in case people are wondering, you can't charge for WatchKit apps, because they're, right now they're only remote view, as they extend from the iPhone app. So you have to charge for the iPhone app and then build that functionality in, quote unquote, for free for the watch.
Well, but I think that there's going to be a lot of apps that are specific for the watch, though, that are being supported through the, I mean, I think that there's going to be new functionality that you're going to end up with on your phone that is going to be an opportunity to use on your watch, if that makes sense.
I think the first thing people are going to do they're going to enjoy the apps that they happen to have installed already that have that express functionality to the watch, but they're also going to go and look for, oh, wow, what apps do we not own that are cool things to have for this watch?
Right.
Absolutely.
I speak from a certain amount of experience.
All right. Let's. And you mentioned, I should probably fill in the details. You mentioned, Renee, that Apple is spending $2 billion on a data center. The old Sapphire plant's being converted
down by the mine,
Mesa, Arizona. Remember that plant?
Apple's trying to jump my claim.
GT was going to build to make Sapphire. Then they went bankrupt, and Apple has the plant. Used to make solar panels. They're going to turn it into a data center in Mesa, Arizona, which is good news for Mesa because it's going to put some.
Well, you have a lot of money when you're like, well, what are we going to do with that? I mean, we got it sitting down there. We don't want to just let it go. I mean, it's got a lot of infrastructure. Let's just throw some more computers in there.
I suspect it has something to do with appeasing the city government of Mesa, because there was some concern about loss of jobs. 150 full-time Apple employees will be hired there, and 300 to 500 construction and trade jobs during its construction. It will be powered by 100% renewable energy, including a new local solar farm. So that's nice.
That's the kind of agility that all that money gives you.
Yeah. Exactly. Although they're not, to be fair, going to spend the $2 billion right away. I imagine it'll be spread out a bit.
No. But it's like, you know, it's like putting, for us, it's like putting a gazebo on the house. Yep. Project, you plan it out, you spend the money.
We're going to do gazebo. $2 billion gazebo.
I mean, if it takes more than about 6 weeks, they will have already made the money. Or more than 2 weeks. In 2 or 3 weeks, they will have already made that money back.
Sure. That's a good point. That's just a couple of weeks' salary there.
It's amazing when you look at how much money they tell you they've spent on the stock repurchases and everything else, and you look at how much money they've made, and the money hasn't changed. Like, they spent all this money, and they still have all this money.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can't imagine. Well,
and again, at the trajectory that they've been on, and who knows if they're going to continue the stock repurchase, there won't be any stock left after about 2022. So, you know, like literally, there won't be any stock left if they keep on repurchasing this fast, and they end up with $150 billion in the bank without any, you know,
Without Carl Icahn, without having to pay a dividend.
Yeah, well, I think that that's the I personally think the whole buyback thing and the dividends are a waste of money. I think Apple should continue to, you know, do innovative things with the money, not just buy it back for investors. But if they're going to do it, I think that the buyback makes way more sense than the dividends. The dividends is just pouring money down the drain to investors. Whereas, I mean, and when I say that, I'm just saying that the investors are getting something out of it. The stock is going up. You know, you're investing in a company that at its size should be growing 1 or 2% a year and is growing a lot faster than that. You know, so the investors are getting their value out of it from there. And the, you know, so I don't think that Apple owes them anything. But I think that if they're going to do it, they might as well do stock buyback, because eventually, again, if they continue to do it, go down that trajectory, they'll buy themselves back.
What is the value of the outstanding Apple shares?
I did the math at some point.
It's a bit of a calculation.
It's only complicated because you can't use shareholder money to buy back shareholder money. You can use other sources of money to buy back.
That's interesting. How interesting.
Well, because the money you have is shareholder money, so you can't technically buy your own shares with that money. You've got
Apple shares outstanding of $5.825 billion.
That's all?
Shares.
Oh, billion share. And it's $118 a share, so multiply. It comes out to a little more than they got.
You've got the number sheet open, Leo.
Yeah, I should use these numbers.
That could be the only way they've actually screwed themselves, where now they're so valuable they can't even they can't afford to buy themselves out.
Yeah. So we're talking hundreds, maybe set, what is it, $700 billion for, to buy all that stock back. So that's
it was amazing. I tried to compare the Samsung earnings to the Apple earnings, and the Samsung earnings were in trillions of
yen,
won.
Whatever, won.
And so then I converted Apple, and it started breaking when I got to quadrillions of won.
The only conclusion when you do that math is I don't want to piss off either company.
they could own surface-to-air missiles. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at FreshBooks. If you are a small business and you're trying to do these kinds of calculations, FreshBooks is here for you. It's the cloud accounting solution designed from the ground up for entrepreneurs, freelancers, small businesses. It's what I used because I hate doing invoices, and I was using Microsoft Word and Excel and numbers and that kind of thing to put these invoices together. It was such a pain, I wouldn't do it. FreshBooks saved my life. Forbes magazine calls FreshBooks incredibly user-friendly, and there's a good reason. It is. I've been using it for years. If you're doing your own invoices, you want to try FreshBooks. It lets you, first of all, make a great professional-looking invoice very easily. And then what's great is, you know, you email them out. You can have them printed and mailed as well. FreshBooks will do that. But oftentimes the email is fast. And because on the email there's a pay me button that accepts all the top credit cards and other online payment methods, you get paid faster. In fact, on average, FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster. They double their revenue in the first 24 months as well. I don't know if that's just because they're smart and using FreshBooks or what. You also spend less time on paperwork because FreshBooks takes time and hours. They're great free apps on Android and iOS that'll let you keep track of your hours, get them right into the invoices. You can even take pictures of receipts and get them into the expenses. So on average, you'll save 2 days a month doing paperwork. 2 days you could put into doing stuff that makes you more money. I want you to try it. FreshBooks is fantastic. We've got 30 days free waiting for you at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. All I ask is when you get to the how did you hear about us section, you put MacBreak Weekly in there so they know that you heard it on this show. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Break for 30 days free. It will say, I'm telling you, it is a lifesaver. Apple and Samsung are now in a dead heat globally for smartphone. Is it globally or is that nationally for smartphone
globally
dominance? South Koreans won't say how many smartphones they sold in the December quarter, but they shipped 95 million, and that about 70%, high 70s, were high-end phones. That means their smartphone sales were somewhere around 71 to 75 million, which is right in there with Apple, which sold 74.5 million. And of course, we saw that Apple had 50% of activations in the U.S. It means Samsung had something less than half. Probably
it's really hard math because it's hard to decide what's sell through and what's sell in, like what's actually sold to customers and what's stuffed into channels. And Ben Baharin on TechPinions did a really good, he has access, he's an analyst, he has access to all sorts of device inventory and sell through data. And he put together a nice chart that basically said for the first time, they're neck and neck. And what's hard to remember, though, is that Apple has never really been in the lead here. They were way behind Nokia when they started. BlackBerry was way ahead. Then Samsung zoomed past all of them. So Apple's traditionally not been the top player in phones. Steve Jobs famously said he wanted 1 or 2% of the market. So it's pretty interesting to see Apple's trajectory there.
And as far as apps, Apple's making more money, but Google Play selling more apps. Google Play outpaced Apple's App Store downloads by about 60%, according to App Annie in 2014. But the App Store somehow made more than 70% more in revenue than Google Play.
Clash of Clans. That's how they can afford the Super Bowl ad, Leo.
Amazing. There were two apps on the Super Bowl. There was there's the Gods of War app, too, with Kate Upton in a metal breastplate.
And Liam Neeson playing Clash of Clans.
Loved Liam Neeson in the Clash of Clans ad.
Great ad.
You know, it's funny. You give me a choice between an attractive young woman and Liam Neeson. I'm going to take Liam Neeson every time.
He's got, like Alex Lindsay, he's got very particular skills.
I have very particular skills. Did you all see that ad? That was such a great, I should run that. I'm sure everybody saw it, but.
Run the ad.
Question. Which one would you rather have as an enemy? I'd much rather be on Liam Neeson's side.
Clash of Clans, which I play, it's a fun game. We've got a Twit clan on Clash of Clans. Is a game where you kind of attack. Wait a minute. He lost. Do you want revenge? I love that.
I don't know you, Big Buffet Boy 85. But if you think you can humiliate me and take my gold, think again.
I want to be Big Buffet Boy 85.
You with lots of barbarians and dragons. I can't wait to destroy your village. While you beg for mercy, but you will get no mercy. I will have my revenge.
Lime. Taken four.
Is this going for Liam?
Liam?
It's, Liam. You will regret the day you crossed Angry Neeson 52.
Angry Neeson 52.
They gotta have an Angry Neeson 52 now, right?
I love it when, like, these really great actors, it's like they're handed this key to a locked cabinet somewhere in the world that they put on their key ring, and at some point they say, you know what? I think now's the time I use this key to unlock that closet that's just filled with money for me to use this wonderful character that I've built over the past 30 years. I love that.
Neeson 52.
Remember William Shatner's I'm a Shaman for Gods, for Warcraft, World of Warcraft.
Oh, that's right.
I'm a Shaman.
And then they had Mr. T was Mr. T. Yes. We did that too.
So great.
But that just shows you how much money there, I mean, really the news angle on that, by the way, is there's a lot of money in apps if they bought a $4 million Super Bowl ad. And I'm sure Liam wasn't cheap either.
In-app purchase.
Yeah.
Let's say it again. In-app purchase. Yeah. That is, it generates a sickening amount of money.
Wow.
I forgot who said it. Someone was saying this on Twitter yesterday that they were watching, I think it was James Thompson, the developer of Peacock, said he was watching kids play. And they had 10 apps going at once because they didn't like having to wait and they couldn't pay for stuff. So they would have 10 games going at once and just switch between them as the timeout periods would expire.
doesn't that freak you out a little bit? Because that really is at best obsessive behavior, at worst addictive behavior. And I really think that there might be a time coming when everyone's going to take three steps back and say, let's look at this like dispassionately and say, oh my God, this could be the tobacco ruling sort of thing. This could be like the corn syrup problems that people are attacking other industries for. I do think that that app game developers might be facing a certain backlash like that in the next year or two, where people realize that they're building machines to just keep people hooked onto a repetitive reward behavior. And that's
just, you can say that about Las Vegas. You can say it about Facebook. You can say it about games. I mean, I know that for me, you know, just checking all the things that I check and that I want to look at. I'm at a nice hotel it's a Michelin, I guess, 3-star restaurant downstairs. I asked for, you know, for breakfast, I asked for a certain table and they were like, oh, you want to have the good view? And I was like, no, that's just where my cell coverage works. You know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, and so I think that a lot of us, our lives become this. I noticed it when that our lives get very much wrapped around, you know, our devices to a level that we got to, you know.
I'll make this quick because otherwise this could turn into a 2-hour topic. But I appreciate that. But there's also, they really are, they use the same psychology they use to build slot machines, where it's not just certain people are going to simply use their phones too much and be on Twitter and be on Facebook. They're creating a game experience to make sure that the point at which your decision making is at the most weak. I'm not talking about in general. I'm talking about at this moment, here's where we hit them with another decision to keep playing the game. So that's why I think that it's the tobacco companies could not back away from these claims the way that like McDonald's or other manufacturers could, where they can say, we just make food that people like, and people like sugar, they like salt, they like fat. The tobacco companies had to admit, after being forced with evidence, that no, we are actually intentionally goosing up these numbers to make sure that people find it very, very hard to stop using the product.
Look at this. This is from Think Gaming. I don't know them. It's top grossing iOS games. This is for one day.
Yeah.
One day, revenue of Clash of Clans. There were 194,000 new installs. $1.6 million for one day. Game of War, which was the one that had Kate Upton, $1.1 million a day.
And 30% of that would be?
Apple gets that's right. In fact, add that's these correct. Up because this is one day. Candy Crush Saga, almost a million. Candy Crush Soda Saga, 390,000. Boom Beach, 300,000. Big Fish Casino, $250,000. Hey Day, 216,000. Madden. And this is all one day revenue. Look how well Shinbu Luo Shou Wei John Shenzhou Doda did.
Look at the amount of money Apple pays to developers and figure out how much of that is likely going to this top list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, almost all. Minecraft Pocket Edition, only $61,000, but that's not in-app purchases, right? That's just you pay $7 up front. That is a great, great chart. Thank you, ScooterX, for passing that along.
Yeah. Crossy Road, $28,000 a day, it looked like.
Yeah. There's money in in-app purchase. Yeah. Crossy Road, you could play without buying easy.
It's kind of crazy, actually, to think that Crossy Road
pays a buck for a character
exactly
you're going to get eventually.
$28,000 a day.
Well, in some ways, though, I think that it's, you know, again, like Field Runners is a good example. I think I paid $3 for that and since have paid $50. You know, because I just buy more things so I can, you know, I just want to buy my little extra whatever. They do it really well because it's like 20,000 points that'll take you 6 months to, you know, to work through. So it's not that big of a deal. But you look at it at the end and you go, wow, I paid as much as a console game for this little game that I'm playing on my iPhone.
And to Andy's point, like it is a whale system. There are certain people who just spend thousands and thousands of dollars on these apps every weekend.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to shirk my responsibility here because we as a community said we're not going to pay $10 for Super Monkey Ball. We'll take the free game and then pay you $1,000 so that our Monkey Ball looks better than the other guy's Monkey Ball or gets back on the race faster. So we said what we're willing to pay for. You know.
Yeah, Apple.
I don't think
Apple,
that's necessarily
Apple
bad
also
thing.
Has the responsibility.
Absolutely.
Because they're the ones who said that, no, we're not going to let you release games that people can just try. You have to keep only release things that are generating revenue, that get them to buy or get them to go away. I'm sorry, I'll let you go.
No, I just think, you know, like with my kids, I don't buy them anything. I mean, they get the game. I mean, I'll buy the game. You know, or download. I don't really download a lot of free stuff, mostly because I'm always afraid that it's just going to be some in-app purchase hook. So I usually want to see something be 99 cents or $1.99 or $4.99, whatever. Yep. And then I buy it and I feel like I'm going to get at least some value. But when my kids get to the end where they want in-app purchases, I'm like, oh, I'll just move on to another game.
It's funny because talked to a lot of developers and they said that people won't pay to get rid of ads. They put ads in and they offered $1 and people just will put up with the ads. They'll give you a level to download and they'll offer you to buy 5 more levels and you won't buy them. You'll just go to the next free game. I mean, everyone is sort of struggling.
It's a complicated issue, and I've been looking at this and talking to people. I've been talking to a lot of behavior psychologists, as a matter of fact, about how this mechanism works. And a lot of the things that just put that bad taste in my mouth is that it's the same reason why you wonder why you get the spam email that's just so ridiculous that you wonder, God, what's the point of even sending out something that's this stupid? And then you look into why this was put out and how it was put out that way. They're not looking to convince most people that this is a legitimate thing. They're seeking out the 4% or the 2% that are that gullible to identify those people that they can target them later. And that's what I feel like a lot of this in-app purchase thing is doing later. It's not most of us are able to spend a certain amount of money that we're comfortable with and get our enjoyment out of the game and put it down. But I think that I don't know for sure, but I'd say I would hate to think that as part of these companies' business plan, it says there's a PowerPoint slide somewhere that says that statistically speaking, 4% have addictive personalities that we can find. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that we've got 96 users out of 100 that are going to just give us $1 or $2. It's just out there to find those 4% that are going to give us 75% of our revenue.
The Steve Jobs movie is in filming right now in just down the road a piece in Cupertino. They were at the Flint Center where Jobs unveiled the Macintosh in 1984 and did a number of other events. And as you may remember, the Steve Jobs movie is centered around three or four Steve Jobs keynotes. These are extras lining up. Over 2,000 people showed up to sit in the audience. I know somebody who did get in, and they didn't even fill the Flint Center. They just filled the first four or five rows and used movie magic to make that look like a lot of people. But we do have some pictures. Here's Michael Fassbender, who is playing Steve Jobs.
I see that picture, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm really going to buy that.
I know, and that's Seth Rogen as Woz, frosted, obviously.
Frosted tips? I don't know. It looks like he's got frosted hair.
He does, but that may just, I don't know. The hair's wrong. It's just wrong. Michael Fassbender's gorgeous, frankly, and that's the problem right there.
Always be Magneto to me.
Danny Boyle, the director, who's a great director, really wanted him for this role. Sony apparently did not, nor did Aaron Sorkin, the screenwriter. So they're right now, they're going now over to the garage of Steve Jobs' childhood home in Los Gatos, and they'll be filming there. So these are first pictures now of Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs and Seth Rogen as Wozniak. Kate Winslet will also be in the movie in a role, playing a person who had no historic importance, but at least we got Kate Winslet in the movie. She'll be playing early employee Joanna Hoffman. Catherine Waterston. Waterston.
I don't think that any early employee would be unimportant.
Yeah, no, they could be important.
A lot of people aren't part of the mythology, but
yeah,
which actually brings up an interesting question. Like, there's for a lot of people working at Apple, being one of the first 50 employees was certainly a highlight, sure. One of the highlights for the highlight reel. But it certainly didn't. It wasn't the sort of thing where they'd want, hey, now there's somebody who's playing me in a movie, and now there are words being put in my mouth that I never said, and intentions that maybe I really never felt. But now how many people are going to be thinking that I'm the person who told Steve Jobs, you know what, this sort of thing is never going to work. We need to make sure this will work more like a mini computer than a personal computer, Steve.
I asked Woz what he thought about Seth Rogen playing him, and he's very happy about that. But it feels like Seth Rogen got picked because he has a beard. I think they
–
Michael Fassbender was male.
Yeah.
Was Woz a consultant on that movie? I seem to remember that he was.
He was the Ashton Kutcher movie, I think, wasn't he? Oh, no.
No, he hated the Ashton Kutcher movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if Woz is a consultant on this.
I don't believe that he could be insincere, but that if he is a consultant for that movie, then that's certainly a data point.
Yeah. Well, I asked his wife, Janet. She said he's
Michael. No one thought Michael Keaton was going to be a good Batman, and he was one of the two greats.
No kidding.
He was amazing. Yeah.
Don't go from photos.
Yeah, you can't tell. We'll have to see the movie, but they're filming now.
So long as Seth Rogen doesn't laugh once during the movie, I'll be fine.
You don't like his laugh? Oh, yeah. I remember that laugh now.
And it's fine so long as it's not like it's only when he's laughing all the time that I've got like a 4.5 minute shot clock for that laugh. That okay, we're 3:50. It's okay. I'm fine. After that, it's like okay. I love this movie, but I got to change the gym. I'm just genetically non-predisposed to process that sound.
What do you think of this, Rene Ritchie? There's a little less competition for you. Joystick and the unofficial Apple weblog TUAW absorbed by Engadget. All three owned by AOL. Joystick was a gaming site, video game site, founded in 2004. So was the unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW. I feel like TUAW was still a credible and useful blog.
Yeah, I mean, we never looked at the other Apple blogs as competition because they all had such different, unique voices, and you know, and all of their homepages looked pretty much like the news would be similar, but the homepages all looked really different. And I wrote a piece on Sunday about how I arrived at my first Macworld in 2009 and didn't know anybody and didn't know what to do. And Mike Rose from Tua came up to me and Dave Kahlo and that whole team. We went to the movies together and they totally de-stressed that entire event for me. They were all class acts. Generous people to a one. Serenity Caldwell did a fantastic piece about this yesterday where, you know, she was comparing Apple's philosophy of no profit and loss per product with like the AOL way and some of these other sites, you know, maybe IDG does the same thing where it's not really how important, like for them, it's important that Tua raises revenues, raises all these things. But there's also something to be said for the value that it gives your brand or the coverage that it gives your readers, that you can extract greater value than maybe the clicks that that particular website is getting. And as these companies sort of struggle with the modern internet, and this is not like IDG that was a print publication that was trying to become digital. Weblogs Incorporated was a digital publication, but still it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's a loss for the entire community.
Their last day is today. You can go to TUAW.com one last time and read Michael Jones' story, The End of an Era.
If you go to, I think it's applenews.today, a bunch of them are making their own site, which is good news.
So they're out of, some of them are out of work.
I think all of, I believe all of them. Some of them have other jobs. Like some of them, you know, have day jobs.
But
that's not the right site. I'll find the name. Yeah. Appleworld.today.
Appleworld.today. Appleworld. It's funny that you can .today. You can do a .today.
Yeah.
Oops. Not .todat. I'm sorry. I'm very bad at this.
But yeah, I'm sure. I mean, they're super talented people. I'm sure they'll. Is that the right one? No, maybe not. I'll find the address.
Anyway.
I'm at least looking forward to some of these people starting their own personal tech blogs, because I think that's some of the most valuable stuff that's being put out. I mean, Jason Snell most famously decided, hey, okay, I don't want to work for IDG anymore. I want to start my own thing. And the power of one voice in which the entire publication reflects a specific point of view with no generalization and the ability to be passionate about that point of view, that's so valuable and something that is so hard to convey. Well, not that this is a blog rolling event, but one of the things I respect the most about iMore is that it's a site that has enough funding to actually pay people and to have people that can do nothing but focus on coverage, but also it still has that idea of there is a piece that we would run that you would not, if this piece were simply cut and paste under Wired's masthead or Engadget's masthead, you would see that, wait a minute, that's more of an iMore piece. I can't believe that Wired is publishing this. So I'm hoping these people break out and find a way to find sponsorship and support to keep doing their own thing, even if it's on a reduced scale.
And it is, I double checked, it's www.appleworld.today. And I think Steven Sandy and a bunch of other them are doing that.
Appleworld.today, www. We'll take a break, come back with your picks, ladies and gentlemen. First, a word from Jeff Bridges. He's sleeping. Jeff just created his new site on Squarespace. It's called dreamingwithjeff.com. I guess he's making albums to help you sleep. This is such an interesting site. This is done with Squarespace. Look at the parallax view on this and stuff. The audio. And, you know, this, you probably saw it in the Squarespace ad in the Super Bowl. Well, this is gorgeous. And this is done with Squarespace. All go now to dreamingwithjeff.com. You can go flying with the dude from The Big Lebowski or tronning with Kevin Flynn.
I mean, I think one of the things that's...
Go ahead.
One of the things that's great with Squarespace is that you do get this kind of WYSIWYG effect, but you also can still inject custom code. So you can be, building something and throwing it together on your own. And when you decide you need a page that has something that doesn't exist on Squarespace, which becomes less and less every time, you can still hire somebody to build something pretty custom sweet for that page.
Yeah, I don't know how custom this is, but I'm pretty impressed by this. You can do it. In fact, he even has I think that a lot of this is pretty stock. He has a video, of him building this thing. You start with the 30 templates, 14 new designs, part of Squarespace 7 templates, that are generic, but also specifically for musicians, artists, architects, restaurants, weddings, e-commerce.
The world is filled with restless people.
I think you need to get this guy on Triangulation. I really feel that strongly.
I'm going to talk to Squarespace. Obviously, they've got a relationship with Jeff. I think he's great. Oh, my God. And it's not, you know, he's done some really interesting web stuff. He's very sophisticated, actually. Here he is picking the templates. He used the Horizon template. It's easy to make changes. You can go edit right on the screen. No more toggling to preview mode. If you want to use Getty Images, it's very easy. $10 each. They've got the stock images right there on the site. Social media is built in: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube, Pinterest, and more. And if you want help, I don't know if Jeff called the helpline, but it's there for him 24/7, right from the Squarespace offices in New York City. And at $8 a month, I think Jeff's going to make a little money on this thing. Look, at he's now I think he actually did this. He's got using the e-commerce. I think he actually did this because if you watch this video, which is on the Squarespace site, squarespace.com, you can see him actually doing all this stuff, editing it, creating it. It's pretty cool. $8 a month. And when you sign up for your free domain name, something like, I don't know, dreamingwithjeff.com. Square. I'll tell the other thing. I went there during the Super Bowl ad. I figured if anything is going to tax a Squarespace site, it's 100 million people all going there at once. And it was beautiful. It did not slow down. This is a very rich media site. A lot of great content on it. Well done. Squarespace.com. If you want to try it, it's free. Just click the Get Started button. You don't need a credit card. You can use it for 2 weeks. And if you decide to buy, all I ask is you use the offer code MacBreak. That'll take 10% off. And we'll get a little credit from Squarespace for helping them out. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak when you buy for 10% off. Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere. Even sleeping. Dreaming with Jeff. Let's get our picks of the week. I think we can kick things off with Mr. Andy Anatko.
My pick is sling.com. This is, no one has really the solution to internet television, but this is a really good start to it.
You watching a dentist commercial?
That's a commercial, okay? But if nothing else, it shows you the power of sling.com. Basically, $20 a month, and you get not just content from CNN, not just content from ESPN, not just content from TBS and stuff like that. You get their full live stream, again, including commercials, too. It's $20 a month. The original the existing package has about 12 channels to it, and again, pretty much that
is this the one where they're going to put ESPN on it and everything.
They got TBS, TNT, CNN, HGTV, DIY, Food Network. They've got
because this is what they announced with Dish.
This is what they announced. Travel. It's starting off with, and it's invite only, with not a really large slate of channels, but they've announced intention to expand this as they go. Ever since we lost, that wonderful and I would say completely legal Aereo service, we really still need the ability to be able to have access to cable channels, live programming, especially for live events, live news, live sports like that, at a reasonable rate. And more than that, a platform so that here is a Hulu-like service where they can continue to work to strike deals with new companies and bring more content to the platform as things go. I would be remiss if I didn't say that the alternative to this is to spend a couple $100 for an actual sling box and plug it into your cable box and now have every single channel, all 400 that you subscribe to, streaming to your iPad, your Android device, your desktop and stuff like this. But again, it's a good start. And for a lot of people who might see a channel in there that they watch all the time, this is a good vote. This is another point in the ongoing game argument towards cutting cable. I'll say that apart from the short list of channels, it's HD, it's stable, the interface is quite nice. It really is just a perfect live TV. The disadvantage is that they, whatever weird deal they have to strike with networks to get live programming, things like pausing and like rewinding are turned off for now. Hopefully those will come back. Those will come on in the coming months. But again, it's definitely one to keep an eye on. Definitely worth signing up for in case in the month or two or three until you actually manage to get a code to start using this, that you can actually start. It'll be a package that you'll really, really like. $20 a month, not that bad. I think it's going to be really important to start to audit how much you're spending every month for entertainment. And you might decide that, well, now that I used to be able to buy cable and have Netflix, now I think if I just simply cancel everything except for Netflix and Hulu, everything will be fine for me. This is part of that alchemy as you try to figure out where if I'm going to spend $60 a month to bring entertainment into my house, how best can I spend that money?
How long do you think it'll take to get an invite? I mean, have they told you anything about that?
I don't know. They have not given me any information about it. I've had it for about a week. And I will say that I watch more cable news now.
Yeah,
not that you watch
what you
it,
got,
but
right?
It's nice. Well, yeah, it's also, I like to watch Conan. So it's nice to be able to simply have that sort of going. I'm not recommending this as a, oh my God, you need to dump everything and get this because it's perfect. It's another piece of a puzzle. And it's also, we started the show talking about how there's going to be a great upheaval coming, I think, in 10-inch tablets. We don't know how that's going to settle out. People are going to have to decide what they really, really want. Streaming services for live content is like that, too. We don't know yet whether the right answer is going to be a solution like this, where Dish strikes individual deals to bring essentially cable service over the internet, or if the solution is going to be, well, TBS has their own app, and then you have to launch this app to stream that. Comedy Central will have their own app. You'd have to launch that to stream this. But I'm glad to see more progress in this. I'm sorry to see Aereo go, but I want to see more services come up in its place, because clearly the clock is running to solve the problem of how absolutely wretched it is to have all your service tied into a 500 cable channel package that can't leave your house.
Alex Lindsay, you got a pick of the week?
I do. And I'm going to be, you know, I've seen some online reviews of this app, and they haven't been good, but I've actually been playing with it here in Rome. And my pick is going to be Hydra. Have you guys seen Hydra?
Mm-mm. Tell me about it.
So Hydra is an application on your iPhone. And basically what it does is you point it somewhere and you hit go, and it takes 100 photos or sometimes 50 photos. And it builds a 32 megapixel image. So it basically, you know, increases the resolution that you can get out of your iPhone. Now, you can't just be running around and taking pictures with your hand jiggling up and down and have it work. I have done handhelds front with it. You do have to pay a lot of attention. There's a little crosshair in the center, really keeping it as still as you can. If things are moving in front of you or there's a lot of water, there'll be some artifacting. But when you're taking, you know, I took some photos, of St. Peter's Square from a castle that was nearby, and, you know, set it up on it, you know, just set it down on a bar, and I'll try to post it somewhere. But it was much better than what I got out of the iPhone. And even if you use the same resolution, you go back to 8 megapixels, all the grain that I would have had that night, sharpness, everything was better. So, you know, it's not the replacement for a good camera, you know, or a better camera than what you get with your iPhone. But I haven't really liked all the other features, but the high resolution feature I felt was actually a really fun little thing to add, you know, and I think that it was, I've been getting a lot out of it. When you put it on a tripod and you shoot something like a landscape or the Pantheon, it really is luscious, like how much data you can get out of it. So especially if you're going to be somewhere once, or twice, you know, it's one of those things that you can get a little bit more than if your phone is the only thing you had with you, to take pictures. And so I would definitely play with it. I mean, for $3.99 or whatever that price is, it's definitely worth having on your phone and playing.
It also has HDR video. Have you tried that?
I have not tried the HDR video. I mean, the only thing I got it for was resolution, but the HDR video may be very good. So I played with the – it didn't make sense. They have one that says Zoom, and Zoom is just doing what it was going to do with a 32 megapixel, but just giving you a subset of that, which doesn't make any sense to me. The low light didn't really work as well as I was hoping. So the thing that some of the pieces of it didn't work as well. But for $2.99, if you know what you're doing with the camera, if you're going to put it on a tripod or hold it still or set your hands down on something to rest them, and shoot, you know, and be very careful and shoot something still, you are going to get a better photo
scene. Look at this, Jason. I just paid for and downloaded it and took a picture. So this is the high-res picture. And Alex, you were moving, right? So it's a little weird with you. But look at the chat room. I've zoomed in, I don't know, quite a bit. Yeah. Look how far away it is. And it's Chris. You can read it,
and you can
clear.
Take the same photo. Just take the same photo with your camera. You know, just pull it out and just take a photo with the iPhone app, and then compare the two.
Details amazing.
And you're just going to find that it's not the same resolution. You know, it's just really a much different experience.
Yeah, that's so for $2.99, $1.99. Yeah,
exactly.
That's great. That's a 32 megapixel snap. It did about 50 images.
Right. And it seems like, so it also, I'm not sure exactly what it's doing. When you handhold it, it seems to be 50. When you put it on a tripod, it actually seems to take advantage, and it goes, I'm not moving at all.
Because many of us don't have tripods for our phones. And then Zoom would say, use that same thing to be able to zoom in 2x with that.
Yeah, but still optical, Zoom makes no sense. No, other than, I guess, you save drive space or save memory by using Zoom. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. So Hi-Res is the one you're probably going to use.
Yeah. Hi-Res is the thing that I would at least, you know, if you're going to decide whether it's worth $299. All the other stuff to me was extra. So it was worth $299 just for the Hi-Res. And if you like the other stuff, that's great too.
Yeah.
Apps like this really make me salivate for the idea of an extensible camera app. Like if Apple just simply decide, we're just going to make this extensible. Every one of those, if you never take Square, great. Remove that, replace it with this wonderful super duper third party high definition mode.
Yeah.
I so want that feature. Wow.
Look at that. Wow.
So, you know, it makes me look at it and go, you know, and think about the Google project, you know, Aura project of being able to swap my phone camera out for something with more guts. You know, so, I mean, you definitely see, like, oh, I really want a camera that can shoot 32 megapixel. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Hydra, Hydra. It's in the App Store, and it is $299.
El Hydra.
The Hydra.
Hail Hydra. Every time I get a good image out of it, I do find myself wanting to say Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. Done one selfie and four more strike up words up in place.
And finally, Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
A while ago, back in December, I think Microsoft bought an iOS mail app called Accompli, and they have now relaunched it as Outlook for iOS. And again, this is not your father's Microsoft, you know, when everything would have to be born in Microsoft and just for Microsoft. This app has support. People have called it the best Gmail app for iOS. It has support for Exchange Mail, for Outlook Mail, for Gmail. You can put almost any app, any standard IMAP mail account you want to in there. I didn't test POP accounts, but you know, those are fairly standard as well. And it just does a lot of things really well. It's simple, it's elegant. It is, I dare say, Outlook. If you've ever used Outlook on Windows XP or, you know, Windows 2000, this is not what you remember. This is a really elegant, state-of-the-art mobile application. Microsoft has been making a ton of apps. I think Dan Frommer on Quartz said they have 100 apps out now for iOS and Android, which is remarkable when you think about the history of the company. But they're doing really, really great stuff. All the stuff we used to say Microsoft Labs is fantastic for, and we wished Microsoft itself would do it, they seem to be doing it now. So I've been trying. I did have some problems with password recognition in some of the accounts. And if you have two-factor running, you're going to want to generate an app-specific password for it. But if Apple's built-in mail client isn't great for you, if you don't want to use Inbox for some reason, if you don't like the Gmail app, I would really strongly suggest you at least give this a try. It's very, very nice. And if you like that complete, absolutely move to this. It's got everything you loved and more stuff in it now, too.
We covered it on iPad Today as well. It was our app cap for iPad Today this week because it's iPad and iPhone.
Yep.
Although it looks a lot more like a complete on the iPhone. It has that swiping and all that stuff.
They didn't change too much.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I mean, they didn't change it just to change it.
Right.
They found the car keys.
Rene Ritchie is at imore.com. He also does a great podcast called Debug. That is a must listen for anybody who's an Apple fan. And joins us each week. Thank you for being here, Rene, in your toque. Is it cold in there? Is that why you got a hat on?
It's gotten warmer. It's up to minus 20 now.
Yikes. 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 From Roma, up on the, is it the Palatine Hill you're on, or is it the Palpatine Hill that you're on?
I don't.
The Emperor, don't up on Emperor Palpatine Hill.
Yeah.
Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps, at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter. I know, right?
Let's rewind and say that he said that he's coming from an unnamed castle. Whichever one, he can't narrow it down for us. Which castle?
You can't. It's the thing is that I can't remember all the names of all the. We had a little time to walk around on Saturday. I can't remember all the places that I went. I just kind of wandered around until my legs couldn't go any further. It was a good time.
Ten pontiffs. It was one of those that he was talking about.
But I'll tell you, you know, just in case you're wondering, the pizza in Rome is
it good? Good.
I went to this place called Pizzerarium, and it is supposed to be, I guess Anthony Bourdain says it's the best in Rome, so of course I went. And you just get, it's this like tiny little postage stamp of a restaurant. You can't really stand in it other than just go order and walk out. I mean, it's one of the best meals I've ever had.
Wow.
For, you know, €7.
Wow.
It's It's just incredible. So anyway, it's cool. It's my second time here in Rome, and I've gotten a chance to actually see some of it. So I find all the electronic stores, which I usually do.
Alex is the man in the high castle.
Anyway, and if people want to hear me complain about the taxi drivers, you can just follow me on Twitter.
I see on your Twitter, though, that 25...
So I don't understand how this works because, you know, the black cars in Uber are cheaper than the taxi drivers.
Those nice, fancy cars are cheaper than a taxi.
They're Mercedes, like a black, jet black, perfectly, polished Mercedes will show up and pick you up. Or you can get into a kind of a beat up taxi where the guy kind of knows where he's going and charges you twice as much. And if you put bags, put bags in this trunk, he charges you another 20 euros for no apparent reason. And we can't figure out exactly what it is other than you're an American and you'll finally pay after you argue for a little while.
And
there's only 12 of them, I think. We only see 12 of them, at a time. So you do have to kind of time your Uberness because you will go up there and there'll be no Ubers. And then you're back in a taxi, which then generates more complaints that I put on Twitter.
I think you put some Instagram pictures up, too. I seem to remember.
I put a couple photos.
Maybe not.
Well, I've gotten this kind of habit on either Facebook or Twitter of posting images of wherever I'm at and then making people guess exactly where that is. And so people were pretty good at it.
What's your Instagram?
I don't have Instagram.
Oh, you don't? I keep looking for it.
No,
okay.
I'm trying to think of where I saw
your pictures.
I think I posted on Facebook.
Facebook. Oh, last place I would have thought.
Yeah. No. So I think I posted it either on Twitter or Facebook.
Not on Twitter and it's not on Google Plus. So it must be on Facebook because you have a fun quiz. Where the hell am I?
You got to guess exactly where that is. And people got pretty darn close.
Because Alex isn't sure himself, I think.
sometimes I definitely wake up in the morning. I'm not totally certain.
The man in the high castle. That's where
there you
he
go.
Is.
That's the shot.
And there's the Vatican, right? That's the St. Peter's Basilica right there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was
neato.
People can try to guess.
I made a mistake, Leo. The Outlook is only good for Exchange, Outlook, iCloud, Google, and Yahoo. Not.
Oh, you can't use other pop services or IMAP services. Okay, that's good to know. Good to know. Thank you, Alex. Mr. Andy Anatko, Chicago Sun-Times, congratulations on your Patriots winning it all in the Super Bowl.
I'm glad that when people are setting fires to cars on Lansdowne Street, it was because of the victory and not simple insurance fraud, which is just so boring.
Well, we thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. On twit.tv, if you can watch live, we'd love it if you do. If you can't, on-demand audio and video is always available for all of our shows after the fact, either at our website, twit.tv/MBW, or wherever you find your podcasts. That could be iTunes or the podcast app on your phone or use one of the great Twit apps. We didn't write them. I can't take credit for them, but lots of great developers seem to like to write Twit apps, so we've got them on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, even a nice app on Roku. So search for the Twit app on your favorite platform, and you can watch that way as well. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.